Once more into the breach, dear friends. I'll fill up the wall with our English dead. And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff McClure. Jake is out of town this week, and Jeff is left here in the sweltering heat to talk to the green foam ball, unless you'd like to give us a call, in which case I'll talk to you. And so you can give us a call at 254-773-1400. I say us. I guess it's the royal me, myself, and I, or something to that effect. I'm so used to saying us, it's hard to say me. You know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average did indeed hit a new record high this week. The S&P 500 didn't hit a record high. It stayed about where it was. The NASDAQ dropped just a little bit. And here it is, the middle of summer. And normally, if you follow these things over the years, as we have for the last 35 years or so, this time of year, the market is normally in a slump. This year, it is not in a slump. It is slowly climbing, it seems like, with every week. And the reason is really pretty simple. The reason is earnings. And corporate earnings have been slowly rising. I mean, we've got a pretty good sized chunk of the earnings reports in for the second quarter now. And 79% of the companies are exceeding expectations, which is above normal. So not only are the expectations up, the analysts' expected earnings on the companies, but almost 80% of them, almost 80% of the companies reporting so far have reported earnings above what the analysts expected. So that means they're doing better. And that's sort of interesting considering that, again, I mentioned last hour, the GDP is not rising very fast. It's the first half of the year, we've seen about a 1.9% rise in the gross domestic product of the United States. And yet the stock market is up 10%. Is there something wrong with the stock market? And the answer is no. The stock market is behaving very rationally. One of the crucial elements is that the GDP is not being figured very accurately, in my opinion. I don't think there's anything going to change about that. But the other side of it is American corporations, particularly the larger ones, make a lot of their money outside of the United States, which is one of the reasons that hopefully we will get tax reform. Do I actually think we're going to get a major tax reform? Frankly, no. The last time we had major tax reform was in 1986. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill started working on that in early 1983. It took them 3 years of hammering out alliances on a bipartisan basis so a majority of the House and Senate would vote for the tax reform. It took a lot of horse trading. It took a lot of leadership from the president and from the White House and a lot of arm twisting and a lot of the stuff that goes into, as Tip O'Neill said, the making of sausages. Do I think there's any way that in the month after the Congress reconvenes or in recess right now for the summer recess in August, that they're going to get tax reform through so that it's going to have an effect this year? No, I really don't think it's going to happen. Do we need it? Yes, we absolutely do need it. But Congress has spent so much time wrestling over the issues of health care and finally given up now and ready to move on, as Majority Leader McConnell said, they're ready to move on to something else now. And the something else he's talking about is tax reform, but that's not really what they're going to be discussing. Fair warning, there's a threat to the market that's not very far out in front of us that we need to be aware of, and that is that we have, back in March, the Treasury hit the debt ceiling. It can't borrow any more money, but Congress has passed laws over the past years, originating in the House of Representatives, and those laws require the Treasury of the United States to spend certain amounts of money on certain things. Defense, Social Security, Medicare, you name it, and the Treasury of the United States is expected to spend the money on it, and by law they have to or they'd be in violation of the law. The problem is that going back, you have to take this all the way back to George W. Bush, when we had a surplus at the beginning of the 2000s, and he was president. Now, of course, he didn't do it, but he encouraged it to happen. And the House of Representatives, controlled in many cases by some of the people who still are there, passed a series of tax cuts. And the theory was, back in the early 2000s, by cutting taxes, they would stimulate the economy because it'd be more money to spend. And the stimulation of the economy would generate more taxes, and we would be able to get ourselves out of debt by charging less taxes. And that's a wonderful theory. And I've heard people, we've discussed it on the air. We've discussed it in writing with people. We've discussed it in person with people. But the fact is that tax cut, combined with the fact that we increased spending, which was stimulative on wars and other things, and on a prescription drug care benefit that wasn't funded, the theory that we can cut taxes and raise tax revenues works, but only if taxes are too high to begin with. And too high to begin with, an example, the top income tax rate before President Kennedy was elected was 90%. Now, very few people paid, if anyone, paid that 90% top bracket, because there were so many deductions that they took advantage of. Ronald and Kennedy lowered it down to, I think, 60%. And we got an increase in revenue because people were willing to stop trying to avoid taxes so much and invest and spend their money. The same thing happened on several occasions since then, but we passed that point a long time ago. We have a caller on 773-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello? Can you hear me? Oops, pushed the wrong button. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yeah, Rick and Salado.
Hello, Rick and Salado.
Hey, thanks. You're talking about tax man.
Mm-hmm.
I've always heard about this Keynesian type of. Is that an economy or?
There is an economist. His name's Keynes, actually.
Keynes.
Yes. Who? Basically, his form of economics is the one that the world operates under right now, and it seems to have worked pretty well. Basically, he said if you're going to have a depression hit you, then we need to dump a bunch of money into the economy and spend, and the government should borrow money and spend money like there's no tomorrow, and you won't have a depression. And we did that. And we did. The Federal Reserve dumped money into the economy. The government borrowed a lot of money and spin it, and it stimulated the economy, and the Great Recession would have turned into a depression. I think everybody who studied it carefully, every economist agrees on that, whether they're conservative or not. But he also said something else, and he said that when the economy recovers, and we are recovered, then taxes should be raised to pay off the debt that was run up during the downturn.
Yeah.
And we're not doing that. We're talking about, right now, the discussion in Congress is cut taxes. The president said he wants them to get out there and cut taxes. Well, we're running a pretty huge deficit.
Yeah.
And the idea of cutting taxes with the intent of getting more revenue would work if we had a 60% tax rate, as we did under Kennedy.
And
Kennedy. Yeah, it was 90% before Kennedy lowered taxes and revenue went up. He left it at 60%. It dropped finally to 50%. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill got together with the Tax Reform Act of 86, which is the current law with a lot of amendments to it. And the Tax Reform Act of 86 dropped taxes a little. It was technically revenue neutral. But in many ways, it lowered taxes, and the revenue went up again a little bit.
Well, a lot of people are confused about who got credit for the booming economy during that time. What do you think about who should have got the credit for the booming economy?
Ronald Reagan.
Okay,
now, Clinton benefited from what Reagan did. There's no question about that. But Clinton was a moderate Republican.
Right, but he
technically was a Democrat, but in fact, NAFTA, free trade, was a Republican position, and the Democrats wanted restricted trade and tariffs, which is how they switch positions pretty regularly, by the way.
Right.
Because the labor unions don't want free trade, and they don't want that going on. Well, so actually, William Jefferson Clinton was a closet Republican in many, many ways.
Right.
And the taxes, very frankly, I am of the opinion, as are many economists, that the taxes we had in the late 1990s were exactly at the sweet spot. And as a result, we were in a position by the end of the 1990s. Admittedly, we had a booming economy, but we were in a position where we would gradually pay the debt down over time if we just kept on like we were doing. And then, God bless him, George W. Bush came in with a campaign promise to chop taxes because we had a surplus. Well, the surplus was being used to pay off the debts. And
was there really a surplus?
Yes, there was really a surplus. There was really a surplus, and we really were paying down the national debt under Clinton. And
but we owed money, but we just didn't have a rate of. We owed money, right? We had a debt.
Yeah, and we were paying it down. We were actually paying when a Treasury security would mature, and we'd pay off the debt. We wouldn't borrow another amount and more. We'd borrow less. With
we
each
borrowed
cycle.
Less.
So when if you have a rolling, it's just like if you had a loan. You have a loan for $1,000, and you have five loans for $5,000, and when they roll over, you have to pay those loans off, but you borrow $800, not $1,000. Well, you have $2,000. You have $1,000. You have $2,000 less debt at that point.
All right. Would you agree that under LBJ we had the Great Society, of course, right?
Well, I guess, yeah.
And under Nixon we had a Greater Society.
No, I don't. No.
We didn't.
No.
We didn't.
There was this
Medicare.
Event. There was this event called 1973 that you may not remember, when the stock market dropped 50%, and under Richard Milhouse Nixon we had some very interesting things. We had a 50% drop in the stock market. And we saw inflation start upward rather dramatically.
Now, the social programs as far as Medicare
payment every month that we make to the bank, most of that money I have to pay taxes on, but I never get to see the money. I never get to spend the money. And you could say, well, okay, yeah, but it's reducing your debt. Well, that's good. But if you say, small business person that is paying off a building, we're going to increase the taxes on the money that you don't ever get to see by 30%, you're going to have a backlash. And if you look at the heart of the Republican Party, you look at the heart of the people who are driving the changes in Washington right now, you'll see there's a lot of small business people there who are fed up with overregulation and what they consider to be unfair taxation. And they are the people who are driving the train. And to come out with a tax proposal that says we're going to raise taxes on you, but we're going to lower taxes on billionaires, is just not likely to fly. And it's going to be one of those things where you certainly won't get any support from the Democrats, just on principle. And I think you won't get a lot of support from the Republicans, and they'll get an earful on that one as soon as people start to analyze it. Can we do tax reform in the United States? Sure. And I think it's a very simple thing of looking at the fact that we have an amount of money that the United States government spends every year. We know what that amount of money is. And we also know that there is virtually nothing in that spending right now that we're interested in cutting. I mean, the Republican House of Representatives passed a spending bill last year, and that's what we're spending. And if we don't change it for this year, although the proposal that's before the The proposal that's out there right now indicates that they want to increase defense spending, which is okay. But if you're going to increase defense spending, then you need to raise taxes to cover the defense spending. And the bottom line to it is, if right now we raise taxes to cover the spending that the federal government is doing right now, we still have the debt. The debt, we are not doing anything to pay the debt down. And then we allow the growth in the economy to eventually pay the debt down. That makes sense. Do I want to pay more taxes? No. Although in this tax reform bill, it's basically our business and my family would see a 30% tax increase. And I'm going to tell you something that hurts all the way down to my toenails. If they say, hey, we want to increase everybody's taxes by 10% so that we can balance the budget and eventually start to pay the debt down, I'll clap my hands and say I'll make the sacrifice. If they say we're going to cut the taxes for the most wealthy people in the United States, but we're going to increase the taxes on you, I'm not going to be real happy about that. And if we're in a position where we're saying if the Congress is going to pass a budget, which they haven't done yet, but they need to do, then right behind it in their as part of their budget and part of their tax reform, it makes sense to me that they simply say we're going to spend this much money, so we're going to tax this much money. And if in fact they wind up getting a little extra money in, more because the economy continues to grow or does better than expected, beautiful. We can start to pay the debt down. It's not like we're going to pay it off in the next 6 months. It's not like we're going to pay it off in the next 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. But at least during times of economic prosperity, seeing our national debt rise year after year, when we have enough money in the economy to do that, this is just my position. If you've got a different position on that and you think it's appropriate for the Congress to cut taxes, cut the total revenues, and while we are spending more than we're taking in, give me a call, 773-1400, 254-773-1400. I want to hear a defense of that. And yeah, I recognize the Laffer point, by the way. I recognize the Laffer point in spades. The Laffer point is if you raise taxes above a certain level, the government gets less revenue. And if you lower them then below that level, the government gets less revenue. There's a sweet spot. And frankly, we were in it under the during the Clinton administration. We were in the sweet spot, and you could tell because we had revenues coming in greater than expenditures of the government. Now, can we get back to exactly that? No, you can't turn the clock back. But the idea of coming in during a period of time where we're running massive deficits and cutting taxes across the board without a new source of revenue, I think is dead in the water. Would I support a border adjustment tax? Sure, if Congress wants to ante up and say we're going to raise the price of everything at Walmart and Target and your grocery store by 20% so we can cut corporate income taxes, then shoot, let's go for it. But I don't think they're going to do that in 10,000 years because the corporations don't have that many votes. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number in here is 254-773-1400. And we're going to be back after these important words from KTEM sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff, missing Jake McClure today. He's up in Colorado being cool, and I'm down here in Texas being hot. If this is Saturday, July 29th, then you're certainly welcome to call in here at 254-773-1400. And again, the big news for the week was that the gross domestic product was reported in as first estimate, which will get revised a couple of times, for the second quarter at 2.6%, which beats the 1.2% we had in the first quarter, but still leaves us in the first half of the year with 1.9%. The thing that was driving it, I think it was, there's several things obviously that drove this, but the biggest one was manufacturing. The earnings from Boeing and from Caterpillar were up dramatically. That's over what was expected and certainly over what has been in the past. And people who talk about the we're losing out on manufacturing in the United States haven't been to Caterpillar, obviously. And if you look around the world, you see that we're exporting Caterpillar big yellow machines to lots of places. And the same thing is true as Boeing. A big chunk of Boeing's surprisingly large earnings, and it shows up in the fact that the durable good orders were up really dramatically for last month. I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was around 6% last month. And as a result, we are seeing a sort of a renaissance in manufacturing in the United States. Of course, shale and oil in general is doing very well. We have a lot more drilling rigs drilling in the United States today than we did at the beginning of the year. And despite the fact that oil has not risen, and we are really putting the hurts, by the way, on Saudi Arabia. They're trying to do an IPO where they basically sell Aramco to the public, which it used to be the Arab American Oil Company, but now it just belongs to Saudi Arabia. And they are, Aramco is, their IPO is having some difficulty as they prepare it to come to market, trying to get it to price correctly. And the reason it's having some difficulty is the shale revolution in the United States is cutting into the price of oil and the price of petrochemicals in general. We basically are expanding capacity in the United States, which we haven't done in a long time, to make petrochemicals from oil, and it's the shale oil that it's being designed to do. We're no longer focused on importing oil from Saudi Arabia, which is called light sweet oil. Most of the shale oil that we're getting in is also light and sweet, and it has a tremendous ability to make the petrochemicals that are needed compared with the heavier oil from places like Venezuela. The United States is seeing this wonderful renaissance in manufacturing, and in our oil, technologically, we have leapt ahead of the rest of the world, and as a result, we're dominating. We're certainly not the largest oil producer in the world yet, but we're changing the marketplace dramatically, in that we're injecting more and more exported oil into the market every year. And as we inject the oil into the market, it has a tendency to lower the price. That's why oil used to be $144 a barrel, and now it's down around $50 a barrel. And it's difficult in many places in the world to extract oil for $50 a barrel at $50 a barrel and be profitable. However, for the shale business, we figured out how to do it. Originally, it was $100 a barrel is what it took to get shale oil out of the ground. Now we've got it down to about $30. And as a result, it's profitable to drill for oil in the places that we, a few years ago, thought it was impossible to get the oil out of, in the shale. And this is just an amazing revolution that's going on in the United States. And again, it's a technological revolution. It's somebody invented something, and people grabbed hold of it and began to run with it in a whole bunch of different ways. And that's the way our system works in the United States. And I wrote in the newsletter this week that that's the nature of the United States, despite the dysfunctionality that's going on in Washington, which we were just talking about. And there is a lot of dysfunctionality going on up there right now, no matter what party you're in, no matter what position you take. There's so much infighting and backbiting and ideological counterattacks, but the United States economy continues to rumble along, and we continue to break records in the stock market, not unreasonably priced stocks doing it. And you should be really proud to be part of a system that does that. It certainly is working out very much in our advantage. A little warning that came out, Wall Street Journal had an article on it, and I've seen the same thing happen. I've actually seen this pressure on a professional basis, and that is that the companies that hold your stocks, if you have a brokerage account somewhere, are probably going to be approaching you, if they haven't already, to try to get you to borrow money using the stocks as collateral. And my recommendation is don't do it. what happens is you start to do leveraged investing. It's the same thing that corporations are doing, which could conceivably get them in a lot of trouble, in that because of the tax rate situation in the United States, a lot of major corporations are leaving a lot of cash overseas, and in many cases they're starting to invest that money overseas. And they're borrowing the money here in the United States because interest rates are so low. Well, the problem is, as this continues on, at some point, if there's a downturn and they don't have the high profits that they have right now, if it's stock, it just turns down and you as the shareholder just have to cry in your beer. But if it's a bond, they've still got to pay the interest. So there's a risk level that's rising in corporations in the United States. Well, don't join in that. They're pretty sophisticated, and they very much know what they're doing in these things, at least in my opinion. But you need to be aware that you as an individual probably shouldn't do that. In other words, if you have stock in the market and you need $20,000, then sell $20,000 worth of stock, pay your capital gains on that, whatever that is, and use that money. Don't borrow $20,000 and use the stock as collateral. The brokerage firm would love to do that because they get interest on your loan, and that enables it to be profitable for them to hang on to stock. One of the things going on in the country right now is with brokerage commissions dropping down to such a low level. In some cases, they are loss leaders. For instance, when you see no transaction fee ETFs going on out there, the companies that are doing that are losing money on those ETFs. They've got to find a way to make money. The brokerage firms, be it Schwab or whoever you would do your business with, they've got to find a way to make money. And if they can't make money on transactions and they can't make money on 12B1s being paid in on mutual funds, because both of those are drying up, they've got to find a way to make money. And the newest innovation that's popping up on Wall Street is go to the person who has the big stock account and say, if you need money, we'd be glad to loan it to you and you don't have to sell your stock. My advice is run, don't walk away from that when it approaches you. So let's just say what else is going on out there. We talked about Tesla Model 3 coming out. It's apparently a mighty fine vehicle, and they're coming out, the basic model is about $35,000. And the fact that it takes a lot fewer people to make a Tesla Model 3 than it does to make a similar size internal combustion engine car is pretty significant. Volvo announced, by the way, that in, I think it's 2018, they will no longer have anything except hybrids and electrics sold by Volvo. Every Volvo that's sold, I think they said it was 2018, maybe 2019, will be sold with a battery and electric engine drive in there, in addition to the regular internal combustion engine. And it just probably won't be real long until we see electric cars dominating everything out there. Another piece of good news, and it's kind of a goofy thing. I told you that there earlier that we have a shortage of workers. It's the principal reason that we have a shortage of housing, which is why we're seeing less residential investment. That was one of the things that came out when the Commerce Department released the GDP, is we had about a 6.4% drop in private residential investment. Now, we had an increase, by the way, pretty dramatic, like 6% increase in commercial investment in buildings, and about an 8% increase, they reported, in buying of long-term items, durable goods, it's called. In other words, corporations are out there buying equipment now. They're investing in equipment. They're investing in buildings. And corporations are getting back into the investment business. They were out of the investment business for a while. The anecdotal information, nobody has any solid information on it, is they're assuming current tax law will continue to exist indefinitely. And they were holding off on doing investing until they could figure out what the new tax law was going to be and whether they were going to be able to do depreciation and whether or not loans they made to do the investing would be tax deductible, because that was one of the things that was being kicked around, is removing the tax deductibility of interest on loans for companies to raise revenue. And the conclusion, the reason that, that at least is being picked up anecdotally when surveyors talk to owners of businesses across the country and executives at businesses across the country, is that now that they've concluded that it is unlikely that Congress will be able to do any major tax changes, they're going forward with the assumption that the current tax law will remain in place, and that gives them some degree of certainty so that they can begin to invest. And so they are beginning to, we saw an 8% jump in that type of investment. What we're not seeing, and we got an interesting thing going on, home ownership rate hit 63.7% in the second quarter, according to the Census Bureau, which is good, because a year ago we were at 62.9. Now, 63.7 is not a huge jump from 62.9, but 62.9% of American families owning their own home, in many cases, of course, they have mortgages on them, was the lowest it had been in 50 years. We're seeing a slow rise off of that, but probably the damage is still there. And what we've got is new home, households have been growing at a rate much faster than we're buying the houses. But there are fewer renters. So we're getting a move in the right direction, and it would be good if we had more houses to sell to them, because then they could buy the houses, and that would give a kick in the butt to the economy. But we are there's a critical shortage of residential construction workers across the country. And when the Commerce Department did its survey, the owners were saying over and over again they would build more houses if they had more workers. And I can tell you from my personal experience in trying to get some work done, that is a problem, according across the country. It is a problem, but it is definitely a problem locally, in that trying to find people to do construction work is difficult, and they're backed up for long periods of time. I think I may have mentioned it's also true in skilled areas, which is something that our education system probably ought to address but isn't. We have a critical shortage of electricians in the United States, and they get to charge some pretty high fees if you can get one to come work, because they're just completely swamped. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, July 29th, and if you'd like to give a call in here, it's 254-773-1400. I haven't had any takers. I was a little surprised at that. Either no one's listening or nobody is willing to venture an opinion on the issue of, should we be cutting taxes? Because that's what the president has asked for, and leadership in Congress has been discussing. Should we cut taxes in a time when we have deficits that are running $500 billion a year? And if so, why do you think cutting taxes when we're spending a lot more than we're taking in already makes sense? I'd really like to hear somebody talk about that. It seems to be the consensus that's going on in Congress right now, and they seem to think that that's being driven by you, who are the voters, that you want your taxes cut, but you don't want to cut any federal spending. And I want to know who says that. I have not been able to find anybody who will support that. And I'm sure somebody's got a good argument, because Congress has got the impression. Interesting thing happened on another subject here at General Motors. They're restructuring. General Motors is restructuring again. And they're restructuring on lowering costs, increasing margins, and getting rid of a lot of peripheral businesses that they had bought earlier. They're selling them. Why? Because General Motors has come to an interesting conclusion. And they're a little slow in coming to that conclusion. And that is that cars are being made better, they will last longer, and as a result, there will be fewer of them sold in the future than there are today. They're getting ready for the fact, they finally accepted the fact, that people are not going to buy a car every 3 years, as they did in the past. And they're also looking at another thing, the thing I talked about a little earlier, the fact that across the world, we are switching over to electric cars. And for instance, I mentioned in the United Kingdom, legally, you can't sell an internal combustion engine car after 2020 or 2030. And some places they've already set that for 2020. And electric cars last a lot longer than internal combustion engine cars. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is also an investment advisory firm that's been around for 35 years now, and we manage investments for people with reasonably large portfolios. We manage and we assist them in wealth management. And you're certainly welcome to give us a call off the air. On weekends, we have voicemail. During the week, we have real-life people who answer the phone. We don't have a phone tree. And you can give us a call at 254-947-1111 or 800-914-7526. That's 254-947-1111 is our primary telephone number. You can certainly want him to contact me. Jake's out of town this week at jeff@tpwc.com, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And we'd love to hear from you. And you certainly can visit thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And see our faces and listen to podcasts. And until next week.